we're really pleased to have Edward Allen with us. He's with the Economic Research of USDA and has been there since 1980. And I've seen his name on for many years on the USDA Wheat Outlook and other grains information, and have been a really important resource for me and my work. So I'm really pleased to have a chance to meet Ed this morning. He is currently responsible for cross-commodity analysis for field crops. He continues to be responsible for forecasting wheat and feed grain trade and foreign country supply and demand. And from 1986 to 1995, he was ERS's lead domestic wheat analyst, doing much of the department's analysis and forecasting of U.S. wheat by class. And he was also head of the food grains section. Before that, he was the Brazil country analyst, an international cotton market analyst, an international oil seeds market analyst, and worked on global agricultural commodity model. As most of us know that are working on grain marketing, the USDA information is kind of the baseline fundamental resource materials that everyone works on, and Ed has had a key part of that over the years. Prior to joining USDA, Ed was in the Peace Corps in Colombia. His master's degree is in economics from the State University of New York at Stony Brook. Ed, the program is yours.
Okay, I guess I'm going to be talking about the fundamentals that move wheat markets. Obviously, wheat supply and demand is crucial, but also the relationship between the corn and soybean markets and wheat markets are pretty important. Basically, wheat prices depend on the balance of U.S. and world wheat supply and demand, with changing stock levels having important price implications. The wheat, corn, and soybean prices tend to move together as they can be substitutes and complements both in production and use side. For example, soybeans and wheat as a double crop may compete against corn. Wheat can be used as a feed grain, as a substitute for corn. So these markets are linked on both the production and the use side. There are numerous uncertainties at this point in time, particularly with regards to the fundamental developments and balances. So I'm going to highlight some of those, and it's really quite difficult to anticipate at this point how much wheat prices are going to move and in what direction they're going to move in the near future. The World Agricultural Outlook Board heads the interagency committees that forecast annual supply and demand and prices, and there are different committees for wheat and feed grains and oil seeds, as well as meats and other products. The history and the forecasts are published monthly for the United States and other countries. The Economic Research Service is part of the interagency and does analysis and forecasting for both domestic and international supply and demand and prices. I coordinate ERS's contributions for wheat, coarse grains, and oil seeds, devoting special attention to international wheat and corn markets. Moving to the slide on U.S. producer prices. You can see that, obviously, 3 years ago we had this spike in prices. They moved towards record levels. They came down as the crop turned out to be better than expected. But in recent months, they've been moving back up. The wheat price actually went up first back then, as there was worry about supply. They peaked earlier. So the wheat price peaked first and came down fairly rapidly as the high prices generated large production. Soybean prices went up with the corn prices, but did not come down as nearly as much as the corn and the wheat prices have because of the strong demand from China and the production limitations in South America. However, they came down with record crops in South America last year. Rather than looking at the monthly prices received by farmers in the United States, to give a better feel for the wheat market in particular, I'm looking at daily prices. These are cash prices in Kansas City at the rail. I want to characterize this. Looking at the line, which is the dark black line, that's the 10-year average, you can see that prices started this marketing year last June. I'd like to characterize this market like a cup of coffee. It started in June cold. It was below the 10-year average price. People were quite confident. We had built stocks for a few years. Then in the summertime, their production problems began to come forth. And the most dramatic of these was drought in Russia, but there were other production problems. The Canadians had trouble planting. The EU was too dry in the west and too wet in the east. So there were a number of major producers that had problems. And as a result, we had a significant run-up in wheat prices in the summertime. Since then, they have sort of moved in a range. They've come up a fair bit recently, but basically we're at a level where we're significantly above the 10-year average, but we're nowhere near as high as we were at the peak of the price spikes. I like to think of it as a cup of coffee which is hot, but not boiling. And so that's sort of the situation we're in now, and we're not sure what direction it's going to go from here. But we can go into some of the factors that may influence how things go and where some of the uncertainty lies. Factors that are supporting prices moving from the short term to the longer term. We have widespread weather problems. Russia had this horrible drought in the summertime. Australia has been having a very dry time in Western Australia, torrential rains in Eastern Australia, wonderful yields, horrible quality because they can't get the crop harvested. So there are problems with the supply of high quality, high protein wheat in some markets. The Canadians had trouble planting. They had actually pretty good yields, but once again, their area was off and the quality was not that good. So there's particular problems when you look at high-quality wheat. I already mentioned some of the problems in the EU and others. Policy changes make a big difference. When a country like Russia, which emerges a major exporter, puts a ban on exports, that really interferes with the market. You end up with wheat that would have been milled for human consumption in Egypt turned into animal feed for pigs in Russia. Important underlying these markets is China's demand for soybeans, and also they imported some significant amounts of corn. So China's demand is an uncertainty around this market that's very important. Biofuel demand in the United States and the EU is an uncertainty. The United States, it looks like it may be continuing to subsidize the ethanol. The effectiveness of the EU targets is somewhat doubtful, so there's uncertainty around both of those. Obviously, in the long run, we have recovery of economic growth, and the fundamental underlying strength and demand is driven by population growth. This is a graph of the Vegetation Health Index in late August. It's really dramatic. This shows that the vegetation was sparser in the wheat-growing areas of Russia, and these are actually the corn areas being shown on highlighted, but Russia is a whole lot more barren than the deserts of Iraq, which is pretty unusual and really shows how very severe the drought was. You can also begin to see some of the wetness in the eastern part of the European Union. So that these were significant impacts. The Russian spring wheat was the lowest going back to where we have records broken out to 61. There's been some shift in Russia, but the the role of Russia in international markets is important, and we've really had to change our view of what was important for Russia. The drought really didn't affect winter wheat that much, but it affected spring wheat in a devastating way. A lot of the winter wheat had gotten harvested before the drought really got severe. The dependence of the world market on the Russian wheat production is sort of highlighted here. If you take a look at the coefficient of variation of yields in Russia and the United States, and they're roughly comparable. We both have a lot of spring wheat, but mostly winter wheat. We're big countries with production spread over huge areas, but still, the risk associated with production in Russia, their coefficient of variation is about twice as high as that in the United States. So the world market, as it became more important on Russia, was becoming dependent on a source that was more highly variable. So those of us that watch this over the long run shouldn't have been too surprised that a problem came up. We've had this development where some of your largest exporters, the United States and Canada, have been moving out of wheat over time as their area has declined. This is particularly dramatic in the major producing states of North Dakota and Kansas, where wheat share of the three crop total, wheat, corn, and soybeans, has dropped very dramatically in recent years as the profitability of wheat just hasn't held up compared to the other crops. Part of this is, for example, the corn and soybean yields have outpaced wheat yields in North Dakota. This is not news to you guys. But it's been very important as there's been this shift in the world market, and we were expecting, this is not our current or the baseline that we're developing now. This is last year's forecast of what was going to happen over the next 10 years. And we had the world market becoming increasingly dependent on Russia and the other former Soviet Union countries over time. And clearly, the Russians banning exports is not consistent with this view of the world depending on Russia in the future. So obviously, the Russians have put us on notice that their priorities are not to be a source of wheat for the rest of the world. Their priorities are meat production in Russia. So this has got to adjust our thinking, and it's been a more significant shock to the market. It's a real shift in fundamentals and view. U.S. share of wheat trade has been declining over time dramatically, but in this recent year, we have stocks and we're able to export. You can see in the past as well, when prices go up and we are willing to reduce our stocks. So the role of the United States and the role of Russia are poles apart in terms of how we're reacting to the situations in the market. The market has real long-term growth. This is, once again, baseline view of where is the growth. There was times back in the 70s when China and Russia entered the grains market and imported a lot. But the underlying important growth in the world grain market is developing countries' imports for food. And there's strong demand there, and it's growing demand. And the interesting thing is going to be in the future to see who is going to satisfy that demand. If you look at the balance between world production and consumption of wheat, you can see that things were a little tight 3 years ago in 2007-08, but with high prices, we had a couple years where we're able to rebuild world stocks. But this year, with production shortfalls, bad weather, production is falling significantly short of consumption again, so that the balance is once again shifted to be tighter. However, we have a very different situation in terms of global stocks. Both the United States and the rest of the world have significantly more stocks going into 10-11 than we had going into 07-08. So there is actually a bigger reserve. The Chinese stocks are large, but are not really available to the world market. So that's why I'm trying to break out the United States and the rest of the world. So the world does have some reserves. Now, the wheat market doesn't exist on its own. There's the supply and demand of soybeans. I'll try and run through it pretty quickly here. There was record production last year, which allowed some buildup in stocks, but the demand has been strong. China's import growth has been really dramatic. They're dominating world import trade, and as a result, soybean prices haven't declined over the last couple of years the way corn and wheat did. Now, Argentina and Brazil have stepped up and taken the lead as producers of soybeans, producing more than the United States. The United States production has been growing, but Argentina and Brazil have been growing more. They had a shortfall in 07-08, and particularly in Argentina, but then record production last year really gave a little breather to the market. However, we do have La Nina in the Pacific Ocean, so there's quite a bit of uncertainty about the South American corn and soybean crops this year. So we have to watch. Those crops are in the ground and growing, and whether or not they'll get the rain is a significant issue. The demand side in China is strong. Their growth in corn is strong as well, but the growth in soybean meal for feeding animals has been really quite steep and stronger than the corn. Of course, grains, we have a similar story, a couple years of building stocks after high prices, falling short this year. The shortfall in corn is not as great as for other feed grains. There's particular barley problems in the EU and the former Soviet Union. But it's a similar story. Here, there's a pretty strong growth in consumption, with U.S. corn use for ethanol playing an important growth in that. This is what we were forecasting last year in our baseline with the history updated, which would imply a very dramatic slowdown in the use of corn for ethanol. It may not be quite as slow as projected last year, but there are reasons to think that the growth will slow. Basically, the ethanol ramped up because of both subsidies and mandates, but now we're hitting the wall, a blending wall at 10%. When you try to go beyond that, the E85 market is small. The only E15 is only approved for a few of the newer cars. So the investments to actually have pumps where people could buy E15 is going to take some doing before this 10% blend wall is relaxed. So there's going to be some serious slowdown in the use of corn for ethanol. Now, key factors limiting prices. We've had large U.S. crops for wheat, corn, and soybeans in 2010-11. Large production in China and many other countries like India. The growth in meat production has been relatively modest in most countries. Part of this is due to the sluggish rebound from the recession. The returns to meat were not that great. They're getting better, but it's not feed demand that's really driving the prices except for the Chinese growth. We are expecting slower growth in U.S. corn use for ethanol. Key developments to watch. Will the big yields in U.S., China, and other countries be confirmed? We'll have our final estimates out in January for the U.S. corn crop. It was cut back in the fall quite significantly from the earlier expectations. So there's some uncertainty there as to what will be shown there. Will Russia plant enough wheat to reemerge as an exporter in 11-12? their winter wheat seedings dropped quite significantly. Partly it was due to some dry soils, but also your incentive to plant, if you're in the southern part of the country near the port and you're not allowed to export, is significantly reduced when your government has put a ban on exports. So actual winter wheat seedings in Russia dropped about 20% this fall. Will the spring wheat seedings make up for that? And will they have enough of a surplus? The La Nina in the Pacific is correlated with increased chance of poor rainfall in soybeans and corn production areas of Brazil and Argentina. That's an uncertainty. China's pace of soybean imports is uncertain. U.S. policy towards ethanol, the macroeconomic conditions around the world. So there's plenty of uncertainty. In summary, the increasing Russian wheat exports in recent years facilitated the decline in U.S. wheat planted area, and they took share away from others. Poor returns for wheat production compared to corn and soybeans have helped U.S. meet strong demand for growth in corn and soybeans, but have tightened up the wheat market. Large world wheat production for the past 2 years boosted U.S. and world stocks, providing a cushion going into 2010-11 for the shortfall in Russia and other countries. Very strong corn use in the United States and significant yield reduction reported by NASA this fall tightened the U.S. supply. Oilseeds prices largely depend on the growth in China import demand compared to the growth in production in the United States and South America. The bottom line is that trend yield growth in grains and oilseeds, especially strong growth in U.S. corn yields, are sufficient to outpace the growth in world food and feed demand. However, when you have widespread below average yields and programs such as in the U.S. and EU that boost biofuel demand, these can significantly boost the long run price. The long run tendency is for declining real prices in agriculture, but these programs can switch things, so that's not necessarily going to be the case in the future. Here are some reports, and I guess I can see what questions we want to focus on.
Thank you very much, Ed. One of the things that you didn't touch on much, but a question has come in, is what effects would we expect changes in the value of the dollar compared to foreign currencies to have on grain prices?
I think there's a short-term effect and a longer-term effect, and they're quite different. In the short run, when the U.S. dollar gets weaker, it makes U.S. wheat more competitive in the world market, and the wheat price goes up. In the long run, it makes it more attractive to grow more and produce more in the United States. So a weak euro, for example, can encourage the Europeans to plant more and export more. So the long-run effect is more a quantity effect, and the short-term effect is more a price effect.
Great. And would you think that the recent decisions and discussions by the WTO on cotton would spill over into the grains?
Well, I don't think that that the situations are quite the same. I don't think that the U.S. programs are viewed the same way. In terms of things like the relationship with Brazil, obviously that the official position of the U.S. government is that the programs are quite distinct. In terms of trying to address issues of volatility in some multilateral way, I don't think that there's much realistic potential.
And just one last question here. One of the questions that came in from our audience was, what crop did Argentina remove from production to put more soybean acres in production?
Well, they've expanded their total production. There's been a tremendous movement into cropping and out of pasture. The Argentine's government has intervened in the beef market, they've intervened in the corn market, and they've intervened in the wheat market. Mm-hmm. Because they do not have domestic demand that is significant in terms of price inflation within Argentina in the soybean market, they have left the soybean market alone a lot more. This has encouraged Argentine farmers who agronomically could have a rotation between corn and soybeans just the way we do in the Corn Belt to plant vastly more soybeans and less corn than an agronomic rotation would say is reasonable.
Very good. Thank you.